Healthcare takes place within the walls of hospitals and clinics, yet the health of communities is determined outside of those walls, in schools, offices, parks, playgrounds, homes, and churches. A neighborhood's environmental factors, a lack of nutritious food options, safety concerns, increased stress, and infrastructure that discourage exercise has enormous long-term impact on the health of a community. Yet neighborhood institutions and community leaders are often left out of the healthcare policy and system design conversations. Dr. Prabhjot Sang has written a new book entitled Dying and Living in the Neighborhood, a Street-Level View of America's Healthcare Promise, to discuss these issues. Dr. Sang is the director of the Arnhold Institute for Global Health and the vice chairman of medicine for population health in the Mount Sinai Health System. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Dr. Sang to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much. It's wonderful to be on the show, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Give us a sense of what brought you to this subject of wanting to take a street-level view of what's happening in our healthcare system.
You know, over the last 5 years, we've heard a lot about healthcare at the federal level. We've heard about the Affordable Care Act, a lot of the politics surrounding it. It's dominated our view. At the same time, I was seeing patients and in Harlem, New York, and you really get a very different feel for what's actually happening, not only in places like Harlem, but as I traveled across the country, how rapidly the world is changing, or America is changing, in terms of how it thinks about healthcare. And I thought that there was a real gap in what people knew about what was actually happening in communities and neighborhoods when all the news was focusing on federal healthcare reform.
So what is hard to figure out is, as we spend more on healthcare and as spending on healthcare goes up, the number of chronic illnesses that we see goes up, the numbers of premature death go up. So how do we make sense of that?
You know, I think you're really pointing to what people have started to call the healthcare paradox in American healthcare. We spend more, we do worse. And I was really interested to see that, you know, Bloomberg News had put out that America ranks, 50 out of 55 countries next to Jordan in terms of how efficient and effective its healthcare is. I think, there's a lot of policy answers to that question, but I'd love to just share it in a more of a personal nugget. You know, I was treating a patient named Ray in Harlem, a veteran who died in my care. And what really just struck me when I got to know him and his family and where he lived, because his daughter was kind enough to invite me to his funeral, I just saw the staggering disconnect between what happens in momentary interactions in clinics and hospitals and how we actually go about living a healthier life in our homes, in our neighborhoods, in our workplaces. And, you know, I think that disconnect is at the heart of this paradox. And it's something that I spent time through the course of writing this book going across the country to see how people had actually started to find solutions, discover the pathways forward, and start to mend that disconnect.
When you talk about mending the disconnect, is it a real solution or is it a way to sort of get around and squirrel in and take care of one specific problem, meaning that you can find something that perhaps works for you, but is it an overall solution to the bigger problem?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, I think when I'm speaking about this, with policymakers or at the national level, people really want to know what's the one answer. You know, what's the economic solution? What's the policy that's going to just drive everything forward? But on the other hand, when I spent time across the country, I saw dozens of different ways that neighborhoods were handling their relationships and redefining their relationships with their healthcare systems around them. I thought about four ways that were very common across the country. May not work for everybody, but they seem like they're working for a lot of people. One is that we've seen a lot more people from neighborhoods in new roles, like health coaches, care coordinators, care managers, navigators, who are really starting to form a bridge, ambassadors between the healthcare system and a neighborhood. Second is that the connectivity between community-based organizations and social service agencies and the healthcare system is increasing as there's new ways to share information between the two. The third is that we started to really see that there are different ways that we're experimenting with payments so that the people that actually contribute to help having a person become healthier, even if they're not a healthcare facility, can actually share in the investments in health. And that's just very early work that's starting to take place. And then the fourth is recognizing that actually community-based organizations, people that actually drive movements, activists, advocates, patient advocates, their role in many ways and their voice has been underplayed. And being able to amplify them, we start to really actually hear what are the tensions, what are the disconnects that we can actually start to solve for. So those are the four things I saw taking place, you know, across the country pretty regularly. They don't add up to a silver bullet, but they do give us a good sense of where we should shift our attention.
When you think about the overall problems, how much of it is the financial implications? And ultimately, who foots the bill? Meaning, where does the money come from? And because you really have to figure that out before you figure anything else out, right?
It's a primary, you know, it's a critical question, not only at a national level, but, you know, when we look at pocketbooks of Americans over the last 10 years, we've seen 10 years of wages, of increases in wages wiped out by increases in healthcare spending. So I agree with you, Joe. It's a central question. And let me just break it down on those two levels. On a national basis, if we don't do something about our healthcare spending, it's going to take up about a quarter of the economy over the next 10 years. And that means spending for schools, for roads, for investments, and everything that makes our lives healthier, transportation, employment opportunities, that goes down. And so the healthcare sector itself is bloated, it's ballooning, and trapped inside of it are, in many ways, the answer to that question. I think the direction forward is starting to learn the combinations of ways to invest in neighborhoods and communities in ways that make people measurably healthier, and starting to use a lot of that investment that we already have in healthcare and starting to share it more broadly with neighborhoods. That's one. Secondly, on a more personal level, you know, who pays ends up being a deeply personal issue. And we've started to see real efforts to think about reimbursements, shifting away a lot of the payments which are being shifted to consumers or to community members. We have to really realize that turns into real barriers to accessing care. And so, you know, who ends up paying for this ends up being a shifting target. We're starting to see healthcare systems take on a lot of that risk and start to do the work of transforming how they deliver care in order to be able to answer that question in ways that make sense with people's pocketbooks.
As my final question, I don't want to leave this out because it's such an important part of the book, and that is, you talk about the importance of technologies and software that can help in this and in connecting community institutions with healthcare providers. Talk a little bit about the technological aspect of this, and because you've alluded to it, go a little bit more into detail as to what we can gain from that technology.
I love the question, and it's on my mind a lot these days. You know, one thing we do know is that automating the wrong things makes bad things happen faster. So technology isn't going to be driving us to the solutions we need if somebody isn't thinking about how it's being designed, who is the user that it's going to be helping, what are the interactions it's facilitating, what becomes possible as a result of it. There's two levels of technology that I've really been excited about. One is this great group in Dallas, Texas, the Parkland Center for Clinical Innovations, which works with Dallas County and its biggest safety net hospital system, of basically giving client management software, which is usually kind of a ripoff, for free or close to free, to about 500 or up to 1,000 of these community-based organizations across the city. But all of that client management software is connected back to the hospital and the clinics. So if a patient that everybody's worried about in the hospital or the clinic ends up touching a housing agency, a food bank, another part of the city's infrastructure, we all know. And you're able to actually share an investment, share information, give people critical information they need to know in order to be able to take care of that person wherever they go. And so that kind of sense of situational awareness, being able to feel like there's all parts of the city understand what you're going through and supporting you, is something that is not just kind of science fiction. It's technology that's out there and it's platforms for making cities and neighborhoods solve hard problems. So that's one. The second area that I've really seen to be powerful is on the very other end of the spectrum, is how do we support patients and family members in particular, caregivers, to be really active members of the care team. And you're starting to see a lot of mobile technology, remote technology that gives you insights, helps you make decisions, gives you what you need in order to be able to better make decisions for your loved one, as a really huge area of acceleration that I've seen out there. And, you know, in some ways, there's a lot that's happening in between, but those are two ends of the spectrum. And all of their focus, as far as I've seen, that I'm excited about, is about connectivity, about relationships, and making sure that the right interactions are the prioritized ones.
Dr. Prabhjot Singh is the director of the Arnhold Institute for Global Health and chair of the Department of Health System Design and Global Health at the Mount Sinai Health System. The name of the new book is Dying and Living in the Neighborhood, A Street-Level View of America's Healthcare Promise. Again, it is published by Johns Hopkins. Dr. Singh, thank you very much for joining us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Dying and Living in the Neighborhood. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.